Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. I'm John Schmelk. He's Paul Dottino. The phone number is 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat if you want to participate on Twitter. Short week this week, folks, so we can continue to recap the Giants game over the weekend against the Chiefs if you like. We're only 2 days off of that. We understand Tuesday is still a review day usually, but we have a game on Thursday this week, so we're only 2 days away from the Giants and Redskins on Thanksgiving night. So.
Yep.
If you want to talk about that, that's fine, too. Paul and I weren't on yesterday, so, Paul, I'll just give my brief point about the game on Sunday quickly. You can make yours, and then we'll move on to Washington.
Sure.
All about the defense, obviously. Plus two in the takeaway. We talked about on the radio pregame show they would probably have to be plus two if they wanted to win the game. The fact they got nine of their points in regulation, all off of turnovers. Both a touchdown and the field goal were scored off of takeaways. So very, very important. And the number two thing was no big plays. They only allowed two passes of over 30 yards, no runs of over 20 yards. I think a big part of that, frankly, was the wind, where the Chiefs weren't willing to throw the ball down the field, but you play in the conditions that are there.
Yes.
There are no, you know, you don't give anything back in this world, so you take what you can get. And those are the things that I mostly took out of that ball game.
Yeah, I mean, John, there is no doubt that the windy conditions at MetLife Stadium became the 12th man for the Giants defense.
It's an equalizer.
It really was. Because it intimidated the Chiefs to put a lot of their playbook in their pockets. And then when they did try to throw the ball, Alex Smith was way off.
He did not have a good game. And then Andy Reid, and we've seen this before in Philadelphia, Paul, what happens? He gets away from the run and he falls in love with the pass.
And then when they did run, they ran too many times between the tackles instead of trying to go outside and exploit the Giants linebackers, who obviously, with a lot of subs in there, they don't have the sideline-to-sideline range that some of the starters would have.
And where the Giants have been vulnerable all year, runs outside.
To me, I thought that the Chiefs coached a poor game. I thought that they were flat. I thought that the weather helped to intimidate them. And then the Giants simply said, we're going to take advantage of all of these factors, and if these are all things that are going to help us win, you know what? We're going to maximize our efficiency, and we're going to do everything we can to steal this game from a team that looks like, or at least had aspirations of being a playoff team. And so that's what happened.
And the Giants took care of the football. They didn't make any mistakes except for that one Shane Vereen interception early in the game.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they only had that one turnover. And they were patient on offense. And I talked to Eli Manning about this after the game. Now, I think my second question for him was basically, Eli, how important was it for you guys to be patient on offense and kind of let the game come to you, punting's okay? And he goes, yeah, you're exactly right. Because in a game like this with the weather conditions and when the defense was playing, the offense didn't have to go out there and score 20 points. They didn't have to go out there and score 30 points. So, And I think the offense did a real good job of staying patient, and that gave the defense a chance to look like the defense of the past. And they didn't have any of those blown coverages, Paul. Landon Collins was going downhill the whole game.
He was great.
They didn't, but remember, but he was doing what he's great at. And that's the thing. How many times did you see him backpedaling or chasing guys in the secondary? The Chiefs didn't put him in that position.
They did not.
So, all around, nice win, and then you move ahead to Washington.
I do want to throw one other bouquet of flowers out to the punt coverage team and Brad Wing, who were...
And kick coverage, too, by the way.
Absolutely. Yes, yes. Absolutely terrific.
Yes.
And especially considering those conditions, to perform as admirably as they did against a dynamite special teams team that the Chiefs have had for years and years and years. I mean, it seems like even since I was a kid, the Chiefs have had really great special teams. Back to the days of Frank Gans when he was their special teams coach. It just seems to me that that's an often unlooked part of what the Giants did on Sunday to win this game.
You're absolutely right, and the Chiefs especially very explosive in the return game. They have return touchdowns all the time, and the Giants shut that down. They did allow one decent-sized kick return, if I remember correctly, right? But otherwise, you kept them off the board. For the most part, the field position battle, I think, was even throughout the course of the game. I don't think it was really lopsided either way. So Giants special teams did a real good job. All right, Paul, now you got the Washington Redskins here. I watched about three games worth of Redskins offense today. You get to see your man crush Samaje Perine in person. Now you're very excited about that.
23 carries, 117 yards last week. Samaje Perine doing what he does best, chewing up yardage. He was dynamite.
For the first time this year, by the way.
Well, only the third time he's had more than 15 carries in a game. And, folks, to be honest, as much as I absolutely love this guy coming out of the draft, this is not the time. I wanted him to have a breakout game. Okay? I mean, seriously, did you have to run for 100-plus this past weekend, Samaje?
Better last week than this week coming up, right?
Yeah, but he's rolling now.
Okay. Well, what I saw mostly watching the tape, one, Chris Thompson's a huge loss for them. They use him in a bunch of different ways as a running back, as a receiver. So that's a big weapon out of the Redskins' offensive playbook.
Yep.
And they already have some issues this year trying to figure out what to do with the departures of Pierre Garçon and DeSean Jackson.
Well,
and
then Pryor's hurt.
And Jordan Reed. Well, Pearl Pryor was also not very good.
No.
You know, he's been sat down by coach's decision this year, as much as he has been hurt. And Jordan Reed might not be there. So they're going to be missing a lot of weapons on offense, yet they're still moving the ball because that offense is well-designed and Kirk Cousins is a good quarterback.
Well, Cousins has done a marvelous job, and I stress marvelous job, of spreading the ball around. This is not a one-trick pony. This is not a guy who is just going to say, I'm going to pump feed this one star and that's it. No. No, not at all. Crowder right now is their leading active receiver because Thompson's out of the lineup. He and Crowder had shared the lead for catches on the Redskins stat sheet. And now that Thompson's down, Crowder's the leading threat downfield. But there is no question that Cousins understands, because, by the way, Piran's got the only 100-yard rushing game they have this year, too. Let's not forget that. Okay, he's been doing this and has them at least somewhat still in playoff contention by just throwing the ball.
Yeah, the Redskins have not run the ball all year, whether it's Rob Kelly or Piran.
Well, again, if you look at how many attempts, though, too, that's the other thing that's really wild. Look at this, John. This knocks my socks
Paul,
off.
Paul, he's a Gruden. Gruden's want to throw the football,
yeah,
my friend.
Yeah, they do. They do. And when you look at the carries, they don't have a single guy on the team with 100 carries.
Well, now, in fairness, so they do have three guys with more than 60. So they just have them spread out over the over.
Truly
know,
been the running back by committee situation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm sorry to say this, folks, but more often than not, running back committee is not a good deal.
It usually means you don't have one very good running back.
It also means you're not giving anybody any chance to really grind it out.
No, with Rob Kelly
they
now,
gave it to Piran to grind it out. What did he do?
Well, that's because the other guys were all hurt. Thompson was out and Rob Kelly
blessing
was out.
Blessing in disguise for you folks in Washington. Now that the Beast has the ball, you're going to be fine running the
of
ball.
Course,
trust me.
Of course, 3 and 4 weeks ago when Rob Kelly also was out and Piran started, he got 17 carries and didn't do anything, which is why they didn't pound the ball out.
No, that's true. That's true. Like I said, twice
anyway,
he's had over 15. But here's the point.
Okay.
They're not the old Redskins with the Hogs
and
Riggins and George Rogers. No. So Cousins really does have the responsibility of this offense on his shoulders. Let's not make any mistake about that. And here's what's really unique about it, John. Did you look at this? This blows my mind away. He's third in the league with almost 2,800 passing yards. 67% completes. He's only thrown 5 picks. Everybody knows he's throwing it.
And he's a guy, too, that is not afraid of trying to fit the ball in the tight spaces.
He's only got 5 picks.
I know. I was surprised when I saw that, too.
So
I agree with you.
Very efficient.
And the other thing, too, that I've seen – now, for the Redskins offense, I'll start with this first. It's a lot of boots, a lot of play action, a lot of, you know, Kyle Shanahan. I know he's not there anymore, but that's still the type of offense that they run.
Mm-hmm.
Play action, boots. But the one thing that really impressed me, Paul, watching the last 3 games or so, actually I probably watched around 5 or 6 games that Cousins played. I watched a lot of his throws. His willingness to stand in there, step into a throw, make a really good throw, and then get absolutely walloped is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I saw him make some, and I'm not talking like short little dump-offs now. I'm talking 35-yard corner routes down the field to Vernon Davis, and then he gets lit up. He had a touchdown pass to Grant last week when he got hit by 3 guys and got almost demolished. And he threw a touchdown pass to Grant on a corner route. So he's really been fantastic.
We have word out of Washington officially now that Thompson, Pryor, and Spencer Long, offensive linemen, all IR today, officially.
Oh, wow, Spencer Long, huh? And, you know, that's the one thing about the Redskins. A lot of their guys are back and healthy now, but they almost had their entire offensive line out 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
But now Trent Williams is back. Sheriff is back. Morgan Moses is a little bit healthier. So their offensive line is looking better than it did a few weeks ago.
Which in theory may may prompt them, especially after last week, to run the ball a little bit more.
Maybe.
But you know, I'll tell you something about Cousins. He proved me wrong. I was never very impressed with him when he came out of Michigan State. The last 2.5 seasons now, he has been dynamite. The guy wants to get paid.
And he deserves to, too.
Look at the market for quarterbacks. Why shouldn't he get top dollar? Really? Why shouldn't he get it? Now, the anti-Cousins people and those who said that the Redskins should not have given him a multi-year deal at the end of the year last season all pointed to the fact that they needed to win and get into the playoffs, and the Giants beat them on their home field, and he quite frankly had a very pedestrian game.
That was actually one of his worst games of the year last year against
the Giants. We were talking to Larry Michaels, the play-by-play guy, the Redskins, in the booth before the game, remember? And he said, you know what? This is the game where Cousins has to show he deserves to get paid, because when and they're in, he needs to do it here. This is the game that will impact his contract, because everything else he had done was nice, but you got to win this game to make the playoffs, and he fell on his face.
And the Redskins can technically franchise him again, which I'm not sure what the arcane rule is where you can franchise a guy 3 times. I thought it was only twice, but they can franchise him again if they want, but it's to the tune of something like $35 or $36 million in the cap, which is not going to happen.
No.
So, and it's going to be real interesting to see what happens. I don't want to get too much into this, Paul, but I think we should at least touch on it, because I think it's an interesting subplot. You know, what's going to happen with him at the end of the year, I think, is really fascinating, because the teams that are out there that need a quarterback and have cap space are going to be lining up to throw money at him to try to get him to come to their team. And he's by far going to be the best quarterback on the market. He's going to be more valuable and ready to play than anybody in the draft.
No question.
And I know people are going to say, well, John, they're going to have to pay him a lot of money to get him to come. Well, you know what? If you have a good quarterback, you're happy to have an $18 to $20 million cap hit if you have a really good quarterback, because that's how you win football games. So there will be a long line of teams looking for Kirk Cousins, and it'll be the Cleveland Browns, it'll be the Jacksonville Jaguars, it'll be the Buffalo Bills, who now might be looking for a quarterback. It could even be the Minnesota Vikings, depending on what they think of Case Keenum and Teddy Bridgewater. Imagine you put Kirk Cousins on the Vikings with that defense. Whew, that's one hell of a team. And, you know, there's a number of teams that are going to be looking for a quarterback. Maybe even a team like the Chargers. Maybe they think, you know, maybe Phillip Rivers has run his course. Maybe they want to get their next quarterback in the future now. You know, there are a lot of teams out there that could be looking for the next guy. That
well, Cousins is a now
space.
Guy. He's a now guy.
Well, he's the next 8, 9, 10 years guy, though.
Could be.
He's only, what, 26 years old?
Could be.
27? He could play at least 35.
If you look at the current unrestricted free agent list of quarterbacks, it's Kirk Cousins and it's Sam Bradford. And after that, there's a huge drop-off. Now, if you are enthralled with Josh McCown or Jay Cutler.
Good luck.
Okay, that's your prerogative.
And Sam Bradford has a chronic knee condition that I don't anybody could invest a lot of money.
So
and Teddy Bridgewater is the other guy who's an unrestricted free agent, if you believe in him. But again, he's coming off an injury where people thought his career was over.
You know, you go down this list, right. And I mean, I guess Case Keenum sticks out because he's actually doing well with the Vikings right now.
You know, give him credit. I think I've said this on the show before. Everyone made such a big deal, Paul, about how good Jared Goff looks out of that Rams offense and away from Jeff Fisher. Well, maybe Case Keenum was held back by – you laugh. I'm serious.
The Michael Jordan Dean Smith syndrome.
Yeah, you get these quarterbacks away from Jeff Fisher, and all of a sudden, wow.
Maybe, John, maybe. The point is the class is not overwhelmingly great.
It never is.
And Kirk Cousins is certainly going to be in position to wring his hands together and ask for some gold.
I have a question for you, and maybe I'm forgetting somebody from the 90s that you remember and I don't.
What do you like here?
He might be the best quarterback ever to hit unrestricted free agency.
I mean,
think about it.
Kurt Warner, he's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, but he was cut at that point.
But he was on the street as an unrestricted free agent.
That's true.
You know,
but
the Giants kind of helped him reclimate his career, and then he went to the Super Bowl with the Cardinals.
He got cut twice, though. He got cut by the Rams, and he got cut by the Giants.
Yeah, but the Giants was a definite one-year cut deal.
Okay, I think Kurt Warner is one that would be in the category. In terms of overall career at the time, though, Kurt Warner didn't get a big contract to go to the Cardinals now. You know, he went there on the cheap for a guy of Kurt Warner's caliber, but he's not going to get a Kirk Cousins contract.
No, he won't. I think you're fair to say that Cousins will get the highest unrestricted free agent quarterback contract that we've ever seen. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
You can take quarterback out of that sentence.
Yes. Yes, you can.
By the way.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. But as far as, you know, yeah, I
mean, who else is there?
Kurt Warner, to me, is the guy that just comes to mind
right away. I think that's fair. But
he took the Cardinals to a Super Bowl after that, too. So Steve, he was still pretty good.
Steve Young was traded, right, from the Bucs to the Niners?
Well, Steve Young had the USFL.
That's right. That's right.
Tenure, too. So
I'm trying to think of quarterbacks that – Carson Palmer got traded, right, from the Bengals to the Raiders and then from the Raiders to the Cardinals?
Yeah. I mean, Cousins, you know – Testaverde? Do you consider him?
How about Bledsoe? Was Bledsoe traded from the Bills to the Cowboys, or was that agent signing?
I'm not sure that I remember that, but he was done.
He was towards the end then.
Again, you're talking about a guy who's in his prime, at the top of his game.
Frankly, early in his prime.
So I don't know that I could give you a better...
Just a nugget.
I mean, Warner still had many great years to go, and again, led the Cardinals to the Super Bowl. He's the only one for me that I would throw into your pot of gold there.
All right, let's get to the calls at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. Chris in Syracuse on line one has been holding the longest. Chris, what's going on, pal? How are you, buddy?
Good. How's it going?
We're doing great, Chris. How are you?
Hi.
Great. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, buddy.
Thank you. Listen, I called in yesterday, and Eagles, I think, was sort of getting the point, but I don't think that I was getting it across well enough.
Well, try again.
That I was explaining my point, so I want to hit it. If McAdoo, and I got to give him a lot of credit, a lot of respect for this win, if he proves out that, okay, he can get some good play out of the guys and coach us up and everything, and the team decides, you know what, we are going to stay with him for one more year, I still think that we have a major problem with scheme offensively. I think that the offensive scheme is broken, and I'm going to use that word very intentionally. I've been super critical with Jerry Reese and super critical of the players and said, well, Reese can't assess offensive line talent. These guys can't run block. And now the longer I see it go, the more I think that, you know, maybe the struggles were just what – there was just not enough focus put on running the ball and staying balanced. It was just – it's too pass happy, two, three wides.
Chris, do you think it's been better since Mike Sullivan's taken over the play calling in terms of run-pass balance?
It has, but I think that the only reason that's really gotten better is simply just because, you know, the receivers had to come along. It was out of necessity. I don't think it was a philosophical change of thinking. And so I guess my fear would be, okay, we get everybody back healthy. I would just hate to see us revert back to doing what we were doing because, frankly, I don't think it was working. Like, when it busted onto the scene in 14-15, it seemed to be effective, but I could almost pinpoint it back to, I think it was in December, it was a Monday night game against the Eagles. We came out, first possession, marched right down the field, touchdown Odell Beckham, and the Giants looked unstoppable, and they got shut out the rest of the game, and it was completely handed to them, and it was like since then the code was cracked, and the offense just wasn't working.
Well, Chris, you know, I think it's interesting. When you go and you evaluate this offense next year, Paul, I think you have to – take a look at the first 4.5 games, and then you take a look at the rest of the season. Because once you lost Beckham and Marshall, the equation changed. Now, if you
want
to go back and look at the first 4.5 games and look at last year and say this team wasn't scoring enough points, it's hard to argue that point because, frankly, they still haven't scored 30 points in the end of the 2015 season.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fair criticism. But I think the question is, with the new play caller and the other things into the equation, can – once you get Beckham back, this offense be more explosive?
I think that Ben McAdoo made it clear when he handed over the playbook to Mike Sullivan that he wanted to run the ball more.
I agree with that.
Whether or not it was by necessity because the receivers were down.
Which is part of it. It has to be.
It has to be. Or flat out, he finally decided, that is Coach McAdoo, that force-feeding this short passing game was just no longer a good idea because he had seen for a season and a third the offense struggle. And maybe he just finally decided, you know what? We really do need to run the ball more, and it just so happens our receivers are down. It's coincidental. Let's see what we can do. And, of course, what happened? Three things happened. Let me correct myself. Brett Jones went in for Weston Richburg, who had the concussion protocol. DJ Fluker was inserted into the lineup at right guard. And Orleans Starkwa became the featured back. Those three things happened. And the Giants, since then, they've gone 5 games out of the last 6 games with over 100 yards rushing.
Can I throw in a fourth?
Because
of the receivers going out, you've seen a lot more 12 and 13 personnel from time to time.
Double and triple tight ends.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yep.
So my feeling is, I don't think the scheme that the Giants are running now is broken, as you put it. I think whether or not they were forced to, they have changed their offensive philosophy. And quite frankly, I love it.
It's shocking.
Yeah.
I'm just saying I hope they learn from it and stick with it and don't revert back to doing
and that's
what
fair.
We were doing before.
You know, I think the problem is...
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate the call.
Thank you. The problem is...
Fair points.
None of us truly know, and this is an honest assessment, none of us truly know if the Giants would have actually converted their offense into an old-fashioned style had those receivers not gone down. And we really don't know the answer to that.
And I agree. I think the running game has probably been the strongest part of this team. The last 3 or 4 or 5 weeks, I agree with that. But we also, let's not overblow how many points the Giants have scored either. I mean, they've scored 7, they scored 17,
right.
They've scored 21, mm-hmm. 7 of which was in garbage time, by the way, and they scored 12 this week. So it's not like they've, you know, lit up the scoreboard with this new style either. But again, you're dealing with the injuries at the wide receiver spot, and your best offensive lineman, Justin Pugh, isn't out there either.
That's correct. And I mean, I think what I would really like people to look at, and I know it's hard, and please, I'm not criticizing you if you don't see it, but what I'd like you to try to understand, and I know this because I watch Phil Simms enough, when you're dealing with a adequate at best wide receiving core, and that's not to disrespect the guys who are playing, but they're not accomplished. They don't have the resume that Beckham and Marshall and even Shepard had, because he's missed some time.
And especially when Shepard was out, right.
Okay? They don't have those resumes. So please, I'm not disrespecting them. But have you any idea what it's like to watch an NFL quarterback try to run a game plan, no matter what it is, when the defensive coordinator knows that you have a subpar to barely adequate receiving core? That's what these guys get paid to do. They get paid to sit there all week and say, guess what? They don't have this, this, and this. We're going to fix them good this week.
Do you know how creative you can be as a defensive coordinator when you confidently can just man up on outside with your corners? It allows you to do a lot of tricky stuff with your linebackers and safeties.
John, it's and that's what I know you don't sometimes understand that on game day, folks. But this affects the entire week, the game plan, sure. The philosophy, the preparation. And when you go into a game as Eli Manning and you know that you got a six-shooter and 3 of those bullets are missing, and now you're going to go down to the middle of that western town and the gunslinger is going to be on the other side of the street and he says, draw, and you only got 3 bullets in your gun and you know he's got 6. It's not a comfortable feeling.
201-939-4513. Back to the phones. Let's say hello. I believe Dre in Atlanta on line 4 was up next. Hi, Dre.
Hey, what's up, John? Hey, Paulie Doss. How's everything going?
Hi.
What's up, Dre?
Hey, I'm filling the holes in y'all last statement. Now, when Beckham and Marshall was in there, one of the problems we had with the running game is the fact that they weren't blocking downfield, so we weren't getting those big runs that they were going now. So even though the receivers don't have the resume as the other wide receivers, but they're blocking, and they're, you know, using that to their benefit. Think about it. If I'm a defensive coordinator and I have subpar wide receivers that are catching the ball, not dropping, because we lead the league in drops, and regardless of how adequate or how big your resume is, if you're catching the ball, you're a danger.
But you can't get open. It doesn't. Yeah, but Trey, if you aren't getting open, it doesn't matter if you're catching it or not.
Right. Yeah. True. But what you're doing, if you're not, you're still creating more 50-50 balls.
That's true.
If you're not getting the separation,
that's
like,
fair.
Like Travis Rudolph is. He's not really getting that much separation. But what he's doing is he's catching what is, you know, put in front of him. But we're dropping the easy passes when we're wide open, and that's an issue. You know, so. But that's one of the biggest things, that even when we had Beckham and Marshall in there, they weren't blocking downfield. Now, what I would like to see is, now that we have established I want to see us establish a running game next season when, you know, our injured receivers come back. And I think we'll be more dynamic if we, you know, we create an identity that, yes, we are running and passing team, you know. And if we run, like, 13 personnel and just have Beckham as the one wide receiver out wide, and then you have 3 tight ends, you don't know if we're going to hit them wide on a one-on-one, or if they double them up, we could put two tight ends out in the pass pattern, and somebody's going to be open because the focus is going to be on Beckham. It's so many different things, but if we focus on being one-dimensional in reference to pass first and let the pass establish the run, then, you know, we'll go back to the same thing we're doing. We just have to be more elaborate with the route combination and the execution on the line and make sure that everybody do what they're supposed to do. I'll take that your answer to that off the end. I appreciate you taking my call.
Thank you
guys,
for calling.
Have a good holiday. Okay. Happy Thanksgiving.
You too, buddy. Appreciate
Enjoy.
He went on a lot of different directions there.
Yes.
I only want to take one of the points, and you take whichever one other you want, John. I don't think there's any question that the Giants' wide receivers, Marshall and Beckham, when they were in there, they were more concerned about the passing game than they were the running game.
And by the way, even on the year, too, if you watch Shepard, he had some trouble picking up safeties coming down the run game, too.
Yes. So I don't disagree with that at all. But I don't automatically believe that these receivers are necessarily doing a better job blocking. What you're seeing is that the Giants are going more double and triple tight end. And also now they're getting some Shane Smith in there, too.
I agree with that.
So the truth is they're changing personnel, and they've got better blockers on the field. It's not that these backup receivers are better blockers. It's that some of these backup wide receivers aren't seeing as many snaps, John.
You know,
so I'm not with you on that point. As far as some of the other ones, I don't know. Did you want to pick up one of the other ones?
I just want to bring up general about, you know, trying to continue this style once you get the other guys back next year. And I kind of want to reference a quote here that Ben McAdoo had in his conference call last night. This is the question for Ben McAdoo. It was the final call of the conference call. Now that you've evened up with Mike Sullivan when it comes to play calling, I guess that means they both called plays in the same number of games.
Mm-hmm.
How do you assess the change and how it's looked so far? This was Ben McAdoo's answer. I think our run game is coming. It's coming along. You're seeing some physicality in the guys up front. I think the tight ends are making progress in their fitting. We added a couple new pieces there as well in the offensive line. They're working well together. The backs are making progress, so the run game is probably the most encouraging thing. What you're seeing, third down is a challenge for us right now. We've talked about that before with the passing game. That's an area where we spend a lot of time and we want to continue to improve and work to improve. But I think Sully's done a tremendous job there calling it. It's not an easy chore, and this is the last part. But we're making some progress, especially in the run game. He sticks to the run, which I like. And I think that's something that even when you have dangerous wide receivers, if you're able to run the football, it helps. Look at the Saints this year. They've been a one-dimensional team for years. Now all of a sudden you're getting Alvin Kamara, you're getting Ingram running the football. You go to the Chargers and Melvin Gordon. Obviously Dallas Cowboys when Ezekiel Elliott is healthy, it helps the passing game immensely. Even Bill Belichick tries to be balanced to a certain extent with the Patriots. So these are – and people don't realize this too. Like people are like, oh, Carson Wentz MVP. Yeah, he's having an MVP year. I'm not arguing that point. He's fantastic. But do people realize that the Eagles are one of the best running teams in the league this year? In terms of rushing yards per game, do people realize that? How well they've run the football? That makes all the difference. So I agree. I think it is very important that even when all these wide receivers come back, they're multidimensional and they commit to the run so teams can't go back to that old two-deep zone coverage that they ran against the Giants for a year and a half that the Giants couldn't solve.
The one thing that I would like to do, and John, I'm looking for it. I'm desperately looking for it.
What's that?
As I'm doing this. I had seen last year there was some website that I guess it was a fantasy football site. It had to be.
Oh, you're on those fantasy football sites all the time.
Yeah, really. But I give them credit for this one. It was a chart that was logging the stats every week, and it ranked team rushing sans quarterback rushing yardage.
Hmm.
And I loved it because – when you have running quarterbacks like in Seattle with Russell Wilson.
Or Cam Newton in Carolina.
Right. All of a sudden, the Giants jumped like 10 spots.
That's interesting.
In the team rushing totals when you took out the quarterbacks.
That's really interesting. I didn't think about that.
And
are you talking total yards or yards per carry or both?
It was average rushing yards per game.
Okay.
For the teams.
But just running back.
Minus quarterback rushing.
I like that stat, too. I'm with
and
you on
that. And that, to me, is a better indication of how good a running football team or a running offense is, because a quarterback who's just doing all this stuff on his own, guys who are gaining 200, 300, 400 yards of rushing yardage as quarterbacks, look, a lot of that stuff is run-read option plays, which only certain offenses have.
Right.
A lot of that is improvisation.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Carson Wentz, quite frankly, is really good at that.
So okay. Dak Prescott, same
okay.
deal.
So the Giants have a statue who's a pocket quarterback. It's not fair if you're going to tell me I want to compare rushing totals for teams to compare Seattle's rushing total with the Giants' rushing total when they have basically an extra set of legs grinding up yardage. It's not fair. So it was a great chart. I've been trying to find it, John, for this year to see where the Giants would rank. I guess we'd have to do our own math by literally going through each and every team and subtracting the quarterback's rushing totals.
I'll pass on that, thank you.
I know. It would be a headache, and it would take a long time to do. But if that chart exists out there, some fantasy football guru I know put one out there last year, because to fantasy football people, that's important. They like to know that little idiosyncrasies about things. And I would suspect you would find that the Giants are probably no worse than the middle of the pack rushing the football with their running backs. Even though right now, I think they're in the bottom eight or bottom six in the league of overall rushing per game, they would probably be somewhere in the neighborhood of 15, 16, I bet you.
And also, the first three games really kind of took the Giants down a few notches.
They didn't have more than 70 in a game.
I think they had under 50 in two of those.
Two 50s, I think, in a 60.
It was terrible. So just something to keep an eye on. And I want to throw a bouquet to Orleans Darkwood, too, because I think he gets overlooked here. And I think
no doubt
it's as much his run style as anything else. He gets to the line of scrimmage so decisively and so quickly. When a guy like Perkins, who's more of a space player, who wants to kind of cut and bob and, you know, get in space and get outside, and Rashad Jennings, who, you know, more of a downhill back, but he was a guy, too, that was a little bit of a pitter-patterer behind the line of scrimmage before he got there.
A little slow hitting hole.
I think Darkwood's style really fits the way they're running the ball, especially since Brett Jones and DJ Fluker have been in there. Let's get back to the calls at 201-939-4513. Sergeant James in Richmond, Virginia joins us next. What's up, Sarge?
Hey, how y'all doing, John? And
Hi.
Oh, how y'all doing? I'm sorry.
That's all right, Sergeant. Thank you for your service,
yeah,
first
so
and foremost.
Excited. This week, I'm getting ready to go to the game, too, Thursday night. Hope y'all are there.
Yes, we will be.
Cool.
Yeah, Mr. Tino, I'm sorry about that. But
no sweat. It's okay.
I enjoy the team. They're doing, you know, I love what they're doing, especially I didn't see the Kansas City game, but I taped it and still watched it again. But whatever they're doing, just keep doing what you're doing. 8-8 is fine. Don't give up. Just play like you've been playing. And everybody was so enthusiastic, it looked like, on the field with the gimmick plays and what have you. But and the running backs, you know, I like when they lean forward when they're finishing the run. You know, that's exciting. And the young
Darker
players
does.
Are stepping up, their new receivers. And is how is Beckham doing? Is he getting a little better? Or how is the injured players doing? But that was kind of what my call. And thanks for what you guys do. And as I said, my first game is this Thursday night. I'm looking forward to it. Me and my son is going, and two niece and nephew, and we're going to hopefully have a great time. You know, I don't even care what the weather is as long as I see them play.
Thank you, Sarge. But, And congratulations. Have fun with the family.
Excellent.
And thank you for your service. We appreciate the call. And it is going to be chilly.
That.
And it's going to be chilly, so make sure you bundle up, my friend. Thanks
Absolutely.
For the call, buddy.
Enjoy.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'm just in Richmond, so I'm not too far away. Richmond, Virginia.
Excellent. All right, we'll see you Thursday night, Sarge.
All right.
Thank you, buddy.
Enjoy.
Yes,
and
sir.
Again, happy Thanksgiving. John, I found it. Footballperspective.com.
There you go.
And it's team rushing exclusively by the running backs.
Do you have it this year?
And yes, it is. And it's this is
I
a week
it.
Old. Giants ranked 19th.
Yeah, so 19th. And what are they overall?
I think they're like 26.
Okay. Yeah, so you jump around 5 or 6 rating points.
Okay.
I'm not surprised by that.
And what they're saying is here.
Who's won? The Jaguars and the Cowboys. Not surprised.
Jaguars, Cowboys, Saints, Ravens, Bears, Eagles.
Ravens, huh?
You know?
That's surprising. The Ravens. Alex Collins.
Giants running back yardage per game. They got them at 82.6. And that's 95%. Here's the interesting number, okay? Look at this, John.
That means then running backs account for 95% of their yards.
Correct.
That number.
Correct.
Means. The Giants have run a couple of end the rounds and such, which is probably where that other 5%. You know, Eli doesn't account for the 5%.
Well, he's got that one scramble.
Well.
But the point is, okay, at 19 with 32 teams in the league, they're kind of close to middle of the pack.
Yeah, they are close to the
in terms of their running game out of running back
carries.
Yeah,
you're at about the 60th percentile, or I should say 40th percentile.
Right. That's a heck of a lot better than being in the basement.
Sure.
So I ask you to take that into account, folks, when you talk about the Giants' running game. It's not nearly as
anemic.
Yes, John. Thank you. As one would think when they just look at the generic stats. It's a great chart to look at.
And the thing that impressed me the most, Paul, is that teams now. It's amazing, and it's hard to explain, but in the past. Even the first three or four games this year, teams expected the Giants to throw. They're in two safeties deep, nickel defenses. Giants can't run it. Now the teams know the Giants are going to try to run the ball, and the Giants are running it better than they did before. It really is amazing the turnaround that the running game has taken throughout the year.
The change in personnel, the change in philosophy. Mm-hmm. And it's you're right. And it shows you that if you execute and do what you have to do with the right guys, it's not all that easy to stop you.
201-939-4513. And again, it hasn't necessarily translated into points.
No, no.
A lot of that has been McAdoo mentioned in that quote I pointed out, is that even in third and reasonable, the Giants have struggled. And third and one, they're the worst team in football.
Well,
but
understand this now. Just because the running game's getting better, now you get into the red zone, teams tighten up on the run.
That's a good point.
And so if you don't have those guys to throw to, guess what? You're not getting those touchdowns.
Let's go to Mark in Chicago on line one. He's up next. Hi, Mark. How are you?
Hey, guys. Great to talk to you.
Yes,
have a great Thanksgiving in D.C., and hopefully you bring home a win.
Well, Mark, here's the thing about Christmas in D.C. The city's nice. We're walking around. I'm sorry. Thanksgiving in D.C. The city's
you
nice.
You want to push it?
No, I don't. Thank you. Walking around is great, and I don't know if they're going to change it, but FedEx Field has got to be bottom three worst press box food in the league. I mean, they have these, like, awful hot dogs that are inedible. I mean, I can't imagine what they're going to put out there for Thanksgiving, but it's going to be ugly. I don't – you Paul's laughing. I don't care. The radio booth location stinks, and the press box food's awful, too.
No. Tell them to get you some turkey ducks, okay? So, anyway.
Paul knows I'm right.
I'm not going to dispute it. My problem is the field is all soggy and damp. And I usually spend the entire game on the field, and it. Trust me, man, when I tell you, by the time that game is over, your feet are just not feeling very good. Trust me.
Well, what I wanted to do is make an observation about the defense,
please.
One about the offense,
sure.
And a couple of things that sort of irritate me. So in terms of the defense, it was great to see an inspired effort by the defense. And looking at that game, man, Kansas City throws so much at you with their – in motion and the speed. I mean, the discipline that the defense showed, I think, was really great.
And they tackled well, too.
They busted off only a few big plays, and the tackling is what made it. You know, even if the first guy missed, the second or third guy were in there to make the tackles.
No argument. You're exactly right. And, by the way, the one thing I will say about the defense, as well as they played against the Chiefs, and this is kind of going back a few games now, Mark, they got to get some better pass pressure. I mean, they're not – you don't get sacks, that's fine. But you got to make these quarterbacks feel you, and I did not get that impression the last few weeks that they're making these quarterbacks uncomfortable back there.
Mm-hmm. Well, and yeah, I agree with that. About the offense, I have thought for the last year and a half that the league has pretty much caught on to Ben McAdoo and his scheme, and I agree with the caller that was initially up that talked about the scheme being broken. And my feeling is if you go, and I believe this is an accurate stat. You go 16 games without scoring 24 points in a game, your scheme is broken. And I always thought it was a lack of creativity, and I think it was more of a lack of imagination. And the things I liked about the offense were some of the things that they did that were outside the box, like the option pass, the jet sweep, the shovel pass, that funky tackle formation that basically was throwing it right back at the Chiefs.
Yeah.
You know, this is the kind of stuff when you don't have a lot of wide receivers, you got to do it to make them think about other things.
Now, Mark, remember, you can only do that every so often, though. You know, they whipped out a lot of those plays against the Chiefs. If you whip out those plays again this week, guess what? Teams are going to be on to you, and they're not going to work.
Well, that's where you need the imagination to come up with something different.
Well, that's fair.
Okay. And that sort of brings me to one of my irritants, and that is, and John, you and I have flipped on a couple of tweets here last week on this, and that's the use of a fullback.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're starting this. I have always thought that Ben McAdoo does not believe in a fullback, and that's why we went a whole season without one. And just to show you, I'll give you one example of what a fullback can do for you, other than just blocking. If you remember that swing pass out to Darkwa where Eli threw it a little low and he dropped it,
mm-hmm.
I mean, he could have gone down the sideline to score a touchdown. But what made that play was that Shane Smith ran up the middle of the line like they were doing an inside run, and he froze the linebackers, and Darkwa was able to get free, and he would have gone down the entire sideline.
Yeah,
he even froze the secondary.
Red Ellison
would have had a touchdown.
Yeah, but
on
Mark,
that.
Red Ellison can run into the defensive line too and freeze people. What's the difference?
It's the point of scheme. You got to believe in something in order to make it work. And to me, like I, you know, it's sort of a cliche here, but I think that Ben McAdoo is like Pop Fisher in The Natural. You know, Roy Hobbs runs in with a, you know, says, "I got a contract." And when he goes into the locker room, Pop Ellison says, "Well, he might have a contract. That doesn't mean I have to play him." And that's what I think that Ben McAdoo is like. He doesn't believe it. And I think, Paul, 2 years ago, you even said that Tom Coughlin made McAdoo keep a fullback on the roster. I just don't think it's in his DNA. And I'm so happy, bottom line of this, is I'm so happy that Sullivan is calling the plays and we're getting some new imagination into the offense.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate the call, buddy. Paul, your thoughts on the fullback?
I like having the fullback available, even if he's only going to play as many as 10 snaps in a given game. I think there's use for him, I think especially in the red zone. I also think that Coach Sullivan has done a terrific job with the offense. As you know, you expected that from me because I'm old school, and he's certainly more old school. I, like everybody else out there, though, would really be curious to see how this offense would be operating if they had their full weaponry. And
well, I think everybody wants to know what it will look
we
like.
We all want to
yeah.
know that. But
and
the truth is,
to guess.
It's impossible to guess. And it's a shame because it's always that what-if game. And you know, let's face it, the personnel is not going to be the same in 2018, John. We know that. It will not be the same.
It's never the same.
But there could be some key spots. You don't know what's going to happen to Marshall. You don't know how well Beckham's going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know what's going to happen with that offensive line. They could have as many as three new starters based on contractual issues. Darkwa, by the way, is an unrestricted free agent. I don't know if people are talking about that at all, but he could go away. So there are a lot of things that have to be considered before we even think about what this offense will look like next year.
Our good buddy Len is in Columbia, Maryland. Hi, Len. How are you?
Good, good. Happy Thanksgiving, guys.
Are you going to the game Thursday night, Len?
Well, this is a November like no other Novembers.
It's chilly.
I think it's best if I hang close to the family.
Okay. Got it.
But let me give you a stat.
Sure.
I got down here in 1965 to go to graduate school. I've seen 48 Redskin Giant games in Washington. You still there?
We're with you, Len. We're listening.
All right. So 48 out of, I think it's 53 years now. 48 out of 53. But I am going to miss this one. And I'm not going to miss the stadium or the experience.
That's for sure.
Yeah, you guys hit it right. That's one of the three worst. It's I hope Sarge has a good time with his son and his nephew. But that's they ought to be able to do a lot better than FedEx Field. You know, I like the fullback position. I really don't like our fullback.
Well, it's funny, Len, it's funny you said that, and when Mark said me and him were going back and forth on Twitter, he was going nuts after the Niner game about how the Niners were using Kyle Juszczyk and putting him out in patterns and throwing the ball to him. And my point to Mark was, well, Kyle Juszczyk is making like $5 million a year. He's the best fullback in football. Shane Smith doesn't have that full skill set that Kyle Juszczyk has. You know what I mean?
Shane Smith is a converted linebacker.
Exactly. There's a big difference there.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
he's not Henry Hanoski.
You know, maybe next year. What do we got? We got seven left here, six left, big audition, you know, a six-week audition, and it's going to be fun. This is a big one. I mean, a division game. I always measure performance within division. John, you know this because we go back a long, long ways with the show.
Yeah.
I always measure, you know, how did we do in the division? Again, we got six games against the division next year. You know, in one game against Jacksonville, I want these guys to be able to compete in the division.
And so four games left.
Wheeler will get a good test with Kerrigan. I mean, we're excited about Wheeler. I am. He did a nice job the other night, but you know, we got to see how he does against Kerrigan and how he does against DeMarcus Lawrence and how he does against Curry in Philadelphia and Barnett, the rookie in Philadelphia. So it'll be a good test, and we're going to find out who we can win with, and we're going to find out who we can lose with, and you know, we'll make those decisions that Paul was talking about. Big change. Listen, big change next year. You know, one of the questions that Sarge addressed, and I was going to ask you guys. First of all, a statement: Beckham makes this team 50% better. I mean, he makes the offense 50% better.
Of course he does.
What do we know? A sprained ankle?
Not broken ankle for Beckham?
Broken ankle?
Yeah, he had surgery.
Yeah.
Okay.
Dude, by the
okay.
way, he was rolling through the locker room. You should have seen the size of the scar on his ankle. Whew.
Okay. All right. Anything worse than that?
I mean,
we're not talking fibula too. We're not talking about ligaments or maybe you guys don't know.
The only thing we know is fractured ankle surgery. That's what we were told.
Okay. All right. And that indeed is bad enough. And as Paul said, let's hope he comes back. We don't know, but let's hope. I think he makes the team 50% better. I hope we have Shepard on Thursday night. He makes our team better.
I think he'll play Vernon Davis. Safeties,
get ready. Get ready, safeties.
And that's the thing. People can be like, Jordan Reed's not playing. Oh, they'll be okay. Vernon Davis is still a pretty good player.
I mean, he's a terrific player. And, you know, so safeties, get ready. Hey, one thing I wanted to point out, and I did bring this up yesterday when we were talking to Russ about Flowers, and I just maybe it just hit me this game, and I haven't been watching close enough, but, you know, on plays outside the box, when he gets out of his stance and he's leading and is blocking, he looks like a different player this year. I mean, he made some moves the other night, got outside and laid some blocks on. I mean, he just looked quick out of his stance. He got out leading blocks. I mean, it was really nice to see. Had you guys noticed that? You know, usually we talk about Flowers like he's playing in a phone booth, and if the phone booth moves, we got a problem. But he's looking. I mean, he's looking a lot better on some of those sweeps and even some of the screens to that side.
This
you
goes
guys have
back.
Any comment on that?
This goes back to him sculpting his body better.
Thank you, Len.
Having better conditioning, having worked in the boxing ring to improve his hand speed and his foot speed, to improve his general stamina and overall athleticism. This is why the guy put in how many months of work during the off season. And John and I saw him here virtually every single day, breaking his behind off.
And the other thing I'll say, too, and Paul, we've talked about the scheme and how it's helped the offense and running the football. Running the offense like this where you're running it more than you're passing it, that makes life easier for offensive linemen.
Without a doubt.
And I'm not trying to take anything away from the fact that Flowers hasn't allowed the sack from week two and take anything away from him. But when you're running the football and you're not getting put into seven-step drops in third and long, and you're not being put in those situations, it's a lot easier to block these speed rushers at left tackle when you're, you know, running it 35 times a game instead of passing it 45 times a game.
You know, you want me to say it for the 5 trillionth time? Run the ball at these speed pass rushers. It will take their legs out. It will give them something else to think about.
The second one is more important for me. I agree with you. I mean, if you can't – because, look, there's a big thing. You know, these pass rushers are supposed to, you know – You know, they release and they try to get a field right away if they know you're passing. If you're running, they have to think about it for a second.
It's football 101. I mean, it's not that hard, guys. You know, and I mean, I just think that I want you to understand this, John. I said it last week on the show. You weren't on the program with me when I said it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how many people went crazy, but I did see a couple of comments on Twitter because I repeated it on FAN. Get used to the fact that if you look at the left tackle free agents, the unrestricted guys, the list right now is Nate Solder, and after that, there's not much. Okay? And left tackles coming out in the draft, not much. You may have Eric Flowers as the starting left tackle opening day 2018 for the New York Football Giants.
Do you want people storming your house with pitchforks, Paul?
I said it last week on this program.
And we talked off the air about it, and we came to the same conclusion.
And I said it on the Fan, and then I told you in the lunchroom. And I said, John, these people better get used to it because it's absolutely possible.
And a bigger deal, too, and the Giants will have to make this decision, they're going to have to decide if they want to give them that fifth-year option this offseason. I'm not sure what the deadline is for that, but I think it's sometime in the summer, if I'm not mistaken, Paul.
Yep.
Or the spring, maybe?
Yep, I don't have the date. I don't have the date.
We'll try to look that up for you. But they'll have to figure that out, especially with him improving his play.
Mm-hmm.
That's something they'll have to figure out. And it's not going to be as easy of a decision as people thought it was in week one or week two.
No, it's not. Because guess what, folks? He's gotten better. You know? And that's just the way it is. He's gotten better.
And we aren't calling him Tyron Smith now or anything like that, but he's gotten better.
And, again, how do we know this? I'm not going to stick just by the sack totals because that number can be very deceiving for a lot of reasons.
Yes.
But one number which shows you how much better he's gotten technique-wise is penalties. Because when guys are sloppy with their technique, they clutch, they grab, they do all kinds of things, and they get sloppy, and they get flagged for it. He had 13 penalties accepted last year and one declined. You know how many penalties Eric Flowers has right now? Three.
And the other thing, too,
three.
Paul, there are these sites, you know, Pro Football Focus tracks hurries allowed and pressures allowed. That matters as much as sacks. Anyway, 201-939-4513. Let's go to Jeff in Maryland. We'll take two more calls. Jeff is up first. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, how you doing today, man?
Doing great, Jeff.
Hi.
What's up, pal? What's on your mind?
Yeah, I just want to, you know, thank you guys for, you know, being on the show and all that.
Appreciate it.
The Giants, I love my team. I'm just ready for them to just, you know, just a reality check. Right now we should be basically, you know, looking forward down the line as far as how we can rebuild the team next year.
Okay.
You know, the team has went through the ups and downs, and I wasn't a fan of Ben McAdoo being the coach last year when he got the job. I thought they were going to pick up their coach. I think it was Cincinnati. I forgot his name. You know who was on the list for coming to the Giants, and the other person was
Mike Smith. You're talking about Marvin Lewis.
Marvin Lewis.
And the other guy who's he was the coach for Pittsburgh Steelers.
First of all, Bill Cowher's doing television. He's not coming back into coaching.
And neither's John Gruden, by the way. Neither one of those guys are going back to coach. Or Jimmy Johnson, if you want to go there.
And by the way, Marvin Lewis is still coaching the Bengals. He wasn't going anywhere either. So I don't know where you got those names from.
Well, last year was a couple. Bill Cowher said he was waiting. I think he was interested in taking a coaching as far as the Giants.
I'm almost sure.
But, you know, right now, as far as Eric Fowler's coming back next year, I think that we should just rebuild, you know, basically right now. Just rebuild the team.
Well, Jeff, I can promise you, I'm not going to promise you where he's playing, but Eric Fowler will be on the roster next year. He's on his rookie contract. They have one more year. He'll be on the roster next year, one way, shape, or form. I promise you that. Unless they trade him.
How old is he? How old is Eric Fowler?
He's going to be 23 next year.
I believe.
Yeah, right.
And you know, like I said, nothing taken from him. And Odell Beckham, him hurting his ankle. I know that as being a high profile receiver, once you have an injury like that, you know, you're not the same when you come back. So that's going to be
we'll see.
Are they going to give Odell Beckham a big contract, or what's the deal with that? You know what I mean? I'm just putting it out there like that. That's all.
Because
the same thing happened to Victor Cruz. Basically similar.
Yeah, different type of injury, though, Jeff, and thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Ankle and knee are two different things. You know, fractures are easily to – and again, we don't know what else was there, but fractures can be repaired. you know, rehabbing tendons and ligaments, especially tendons, as someone who is basically still rehabbing a picking tendon that had surgery on 7 months ago, trust me, it's a pain in the ass. All right, part of my French, but it's a pain in the butt, okay?
Yeah.
And it's different. Fractures are easier to repair, and it's easier to come back from. But you're right. You never know how a guy comes back from an injury.
And if I can just make clear for one moment, because there has been a lot of conversation over the course of the year about Victor Cruz and his comeback. He gets cut by the Bears. People thought maybe the Giants would look to bring him back after their receivers went down. Victor Cruz did a Herculean job to make it back last year and to play in almost a full season after what he had.
Patella tendons are just as bad as ACLs, if not worse.
No, they're a lot worse, because look at the track record of guys being able to come back and perform at a high level.
Basketball and football, both ways.
So I don't want to take anything away from Victor Cruz. He did a super Herculean effort to make it back and to do what he was able to do, to play and function in the National Football League as a starter, okay, on a playoff team nonetheless, okay? So please let me salute him for that. But there's a law of diminishing returns there, and that's why right now he's not in the league.
Same thing with Major League Baseball, folks. People talk about the Tommy John surgery, which is the UCL ligament. Know the term flexor tendon. That's what also sometimes gets damaged when pitchers tear their UCL. And once you have a flexor tendon injury, it makes that injury much, much worse to recover from, much like Victor Cruz, who had the patella tendon, and obviously some NBA players have had that too, which is very difficult to recover from. Final call of the show is Amin. He's in Brooklyn. What's up, Amin? How are you, buddy?
Hi. I just want to say, Patino, I love you. You know, I'm a first-time caller.
Thank you, Amin.
Thank you.
Big-time Giant fan. I go back to the time of Carl Banks, you know, Lamont Collins, Phil Simms. I just had a question, a little insight into how the NFL worked.
Sure.
I mean, how do you balance the need for winning once a season is lost? Because doesn't your wins affect how you go in terms of getting a pick?
I mean, here's how you approach it if you're an NFL team, and Paul can add to this. You go out and you try to win as many games as you can. If you're a coach or a player, you're programmed to go out there and play your best. You have fans that have paid good money to see you play. You have to try and win. Now, from a completely mathematical perspective as a fan, and you want to say, well, the season's over, I want a good draft pick, I'd rather see them lose, I understand the perspective. I get it. From a logical perspective, it makes sense. But when you're in the building trying to win football games, there's only one way to go out there and play on Sundays, and that's to play to win.
I might also add that every player and every coach who was caught in a downward spiral doesn't know for sure what he's going to be doing or where he'll be employed next season.
Good point.
And there is no way in the world that they can afford not to go out there and try to win, because that may be their only hope to be doing what they're doing for another year.
Yeah, it's not just the Giants that are evaluating these players on tape, I mean. It's every team in the NFL that are looking at these guys that maybe are a free agent after the who knows, and they'll have to figure it out.
Look, there are many guys in this league over the years who were caught on a team that had a bad record, okay, went south, were labeled as guys who gave up, who quit, and guess what? Next offseason comes in, the spring, the summer, they're on the street. Nobody's signing them. And it's like, well, why? Well, word gets around the league. He put on tape. He gave up.
Eye in the sky, don't lie.
That's it. Don't want him on my team. And all of a sudden, that guy winds up out of football for a year, and he winds up retiring very quietly because nobody wants him.
Wow, I got you. Thanks for clearing it up. And maybe you can take this one off the air.
Sure.
How does actually winning a Super Bowl affect the team financially, and how does that work? Thanks. I appreciate it. I love your show. God bless, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Amin. There are multiple perspectives to this. I think the actual routine of going and playing in the Super Bowl and doing like a Super Bowl celebration probably actually costs the team money, just that process. However,
well, operation expenses you're talking about.
Yeah, operations. Throwing the parade, you know, making the trip, paying for, you know, travel for a whole franchise, tickets, all that sort of thing. It costs money, okay? But once you get to the next year and you're somebody, say, in a sponsorship office and you're trying to sell a Super Bowl championship team, guess what? You have a good chance of making that money back.
Probably a good thing to win a Super Bowl.
Yes. Trust me, if you're out there selling sponsorships for the Giants, whether it's radio commercials or TV spots or stadium signs, whatever you're talking about, it's a lot easier to show up with your little PowerPoint presentation that says Super Bowl champion New York Giants than 7-9 New York Giants.
And if I may just throw in one other thing.
Sure.
Once you win a Super Bowl, that Super Bowl sticks with you forever. And it's good for the organization.
Right. Well, he was just talking financially.
Well, even financially, it's good. Because even if you're 2 or 3 years removed, people still remember you were a Super Bowl champion just a few years ago. The repercussions as they go on and on and on, at least through the next several years, can clearly help you business-wise.
Right.
It certainly helps players.
And of course.
Because, look, how many former Super Bowl champion New York Jets come back and make marketing money?
Right.
Not too many.
And of course, the Giants don't have this issue, but for teams that maybe struggle to sell at their stadiums, Super Bowl championship means you're going to have a full building the following year.
And maybe 2 or 3.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It carries. Everybody, good job. We had a good varied callers on different topics today.
Very well mixed up stuff, and that's kind of fun sometimes.
Good
instead
job.
Of just sticking with the opponent coming up.
Excellent job with the calls today, guys. Good stuff. For Paul Dottino, I'm John Schmoke. Tomorrow it will be Russ Salzburg and Lance Meadow as Paul and I get on a bus to head to the nation's capital. And we'll spend Thanksgiving there. Thanks for joining us. No show Thursday, no show Friday. So just keep that in mind. Don't expect to see us those days because we'll be home in, we'll be home on Friday at least enjoying our families. Thursday we'll be at the stadium looking for some edible food. And then we'll be back with you next Monday reviewing Giants and Redskins and looking ahead to the Giants and the Oakland Raiders as we take our next to last West Coast trip of the year.
Week and a half
out
away.
To Oakland, and we get to go from FedEx Field to the Oakland Coliseum. It's just a nice little slide downwards.
Oh, you're really making me look forward to these trips, aren't you, John?
All right, folks. Have a good one. Happy Thanksgiving.
Gobble, gobble.
And again, if you want to check us out on game day, 7 o'clock WFAN. And it'll also be it'll actually start on WCBS 880 because FAN's carrying the 4 o'clock national game. And then we'll be joined on WFAN for the game broadcast after that for the radio. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you then on Giants.com. Have a good one, everybody.